Okay, welcome back. About about 2 weeks ago, I invited David Duke to come back on for another hour because he had so much he wanted to talk about and there's so much going on. And now tonight with the appearance of that little worm, Zelensky, in front of both houses of Congress, giving a speech like some international statesman, and got apparently several or multiple standing ovations. That's not our government. It has nothing to do with a representative government of, by, and for the people. Nothing. We've been overthrown here by international Bolshevik Marxist Zionist global elite. And these are their obvious tentacles of control, i.e. Biden and Obama, who's running Biden, Susan Rice, Valerie Jarrett. You know who the players are. And then the ones that don't have the obvious name recognition. We got Soros. We got Gates. You know, they're there. But there are others, believe it, that you'll never hear about. All right, David. Merry Christmas to you. It's Christmas season. And you go out and about, and it's kind of hard to tell that some days as you look.
It really is. And especially in these times when there is an absolute hateful war waging against Christmas. And we meant to even talk about that tonight. It's just Christmas is just a few short days and hours away. And it's really symbolic of the changes taking place in this country. I don't know how I want to put this. You know, I guess I got a PhD in history, and a lot of people call me an historian, or they call me a political figure. I've been elected. I've won three elections in my life.
And then there's some people who call you a cab.
That's right. They call me lots of things.
But go home, David. They don't like it. Yeah, they don't like the right. Fact that you've accomplished so much. Get
but
out of
I don't know if I've accomplished so much, but one thing I've done, I am an historian, and I love history. I've loved history since I was a young child. I've mm-hmm. also loved science. My father was a geologist and engineer, and I love nature. I grew up in nature, and I grew up in the Southland, and I love the traditions and the heritage of the South. But I've always been a person that has really devoured the written word. And my parents were very educated people, and grandparents. I had a grandmother that was actually a chemistry professor, wrote chemistry books. And another, her sister, my great aunt, was Carolyn Hedger, who was one of the most famous female doctors in the country. Hmm. And the males in my family were pretty distinguished as well. But just interesting for them is that they were long before the days of feminism, but they were doctors and famous in their own right. And interestingly enough, my great aunt was famous for a lot of the things that you've heard me talk about a lot on the show, you know, natural diet, health, fresh air, sleep, sunshine, the healing methods of all those things. And she was a famous doctor who actually stopped the epidemics, the incredibly terrible epidemics during the First World War in Belgium. She won awards for it. And she later was involved in the Restrictionist Immigration Act, supporting it and supporting the attempt to keep this country to have the same demographic as the founding of the country. It was about 90% European at that time, and that was starting to change, especially with an influx of people from these Khazarians and these other Jewish elements that were coming into the country, which were fundamentally not European. They might have lived in Europe for the last couple thousand years, but they were certainly different genetically in terms of their heritage and their values to the Christian majority and to the European majority in our countries. But the point is that when this happened, the people of this country realized that we were not going to be able to preserve America unless we preserved our demographic composition. And so they worked, and it was a big, big deal, and they fought very hard for a good policy to restrict immigration, to try to keep the demographic percentages of the country intact for our children, because they knew that if this European Christian majority would be replaced in this country and in the positions of power as well. They knew that the country would fundamentally change. And my great aunt was one of the very biggest activists in that. She also worked very hard in Chicago, where they had, again, she was a doctor, but she worked a lot with the immigrants. Most of them at that point were Scandinavian who came into the upper Midwest and everything. And right. They worked in a lot of the meat packing plants, which were pretty bad places, and they treated the workers terribly. And she worked very hard to improve their working conditions and their wages and also their health care benefits, and she treated their children. And it's really interesting, but it's like when people read the stuff that I've said before I even knew this a couple of years ago, they found out this. But anyway, my parents, from the time I was about 3 years old, like I turned four years old in Holland. My folks are living in Holland. My father worked for Shell as an engineer and a geologist. And I had a red rocking chair, and every day they'd sit me in the chair and say, read, you know, and they give me books to read. And starting with a lot of kids' work books, I got through that pretty quick. I learned it pretty well. I actually even went to Dutch kindergarten where they taught it in Dutch, but at that age, you learn the language. And so I was reading everything I could get my hands on from that factor. You know, at first you kind of rebel against your folks and say, I don't want to read. But then you start reading and you enjoy it. So if you're sitting in that chair and you got a book in your hand, you're going to read it. And since that time, and it's still true today, and this is so many years, almost 7 years later. And I'm still reading, I would say, on the average, an average of 7 to 9 hours a day, sometimes longer.
Really?
I'm reading, absolutely. Wow. I'm reading books. I'm reading scientific articles. I'm reading historical papers. And I'm also keeping up with current events, obviously, because I just want to know what's going on. Now, the only time that I hadn't done that in my life as much when I was, first of all, studying for my doctorate. So I was probably reading that much then, but it was related to my doctorate studies, which was Zionism as a form of ethnic supremacism, by the way, which it really is. But anyway, but other than that time and the time I served in the legislature, which is extremely time consuming, but that took a lot of reading, too. You had far more bills, in fact, than you could ever read. But other than that time, like when I was running for office, then you didn't have anything, the time for anything else but campaigning. And all the work associated with the campaign, sure. And so I've kept up with this a lot, and I've come to a few conclusions after all this studying and all this learning, after all this time, some very basic facts that I thought maybe we could go through a little bit today in this show because it's so current. And you mentioned the Zelensky show. We thought I was going to be on in the early hour, which is always better for me because I'm an early-to-bed guy and very early to rise. I've been up since 4 o'clock this morning. I've done – not only have I read today a lot and studied, but I've also – I did, of course, my live show, the hour live show there.
Yeah.
I'll get it edited and get it posted and the internet work with that. I did another 3-hour show with Mark Collette, which is a great show. You ought to have Mark on your show sometime. I think you'd enjoy him. And also one of my co-hosts often is Dr. Slattery. I think he'd be a great addition to your show one night on the best show in radio, your show, of course. And
that's very nice of you. I'd be happy to.
Well, it's true. Yeah, I've been listening to you for so many years, I can't even remember when I started. My memory doesn't go back that far. But actually, it does, I think. But anyway, it was very interesting. I did a show with almost 3 hours today. Very interesting show. It's a fascinating show with a fellow named J.F. Garapi. And he's a neuroscientist. He is a brilliant guy. He's written great books on neuroscience and other science aspects. We got a big discussion, the genetics of Jewish people. And over the last few years, I hope with some of the influence of that I've portrayed with him is that I really approached with them the Jewish question from a very rational viewpoint, a non-hateful viewpoint, but how that these people have the oldest history of radical, what you would call by a modern definition, and because racism is defined modern in modern times as people who don't like other people and who are extremely promoting their people to the point where they will exploit others. And the interesting thing is that this is part and parcel with the Talmud is, which is the chief religious book of Jews. And anyway, but he's come along and he understands now that We do have issues. People can talk about the World Economic Forum, right, and Charles Schwab. And don't forget Harari, who's their really ideologue.
Klaus Schwab.
Charles Schwab, yeah. And
Is Klaus Charles?
I'm sorry. I just did a little transposition with the old
It's Klaus. I just want to make sure we got the right Schwab. Okay.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We do. That does happen. And it doesn't just happen when you're in your 70s.
It happens all the time.
It happened to me a lot when I was 15. You know, it happens to all of us.
It's from reading too much. I told you. I warned you about that.
Probably.
When you were a kid, I said, David, don't
read so much.
My eyes have difficulty.
It could have strained my eyes a lot. But anyway, so it was very interesting, the discussion we had, and we got into the discussion in the New York Times article, which was very, very interesting, about how the Jews today are less diverse than they were in the 13th century in what was Erfurt, Germany, where there was a Jewish cemetery. And this was the origins of what's called the Ashkenazi Jews. And the Ashkenazis, their first language was called Yiddish, which was created starting in about the 8th century in the Rhineland because they lived among Germans. They wanted to speak German and be able to communicate in German. And the easiest thing that they could do and live in that environment was they actually created kind of a new language called Yiddish. And Yiddish is a language that is 80% German and it's 20% Hebrew. There was a little intermixing there, but it looks like that when we look at the genetic roots of this, and there's thousands of scientists that study genes today. I mean, anybody, even elementary genetic analysts are looking at your DNA, can read exactly where you came from, not only in terms of the world, in terms of, say, the white race or the Asian people or what they call American, the Native Americans is what they call them today, or whether you talk about Chinese or whether you talk about, all these different groups. You can literally identify where your ancestors came from in Europe, or you can identify where your ancestors came way further back than that, whether it be the Middle East or the Caucasus or other places, North Africa. And it's fascinating. What they were showing is, and this was a New York Times article just 2 weeks ago, I think I talked to you about that at a moment on the show,
you
but
did.
This is such an interesting factor, you know. So they talked about the headline reads that Jews are Jews as a people, as a race, and that's really how they are defined today. And I can show you a Jewish headline saying, genes reveal Jews are a race. I can show you that in the major leading publications of Israel. They consider themselves a race. They always really have considered themselves a people. And their religion is really based on the Jewish race. It's based on the Jewish people and preserving that heritage and how that heritage is essential. And they actually teach and preach that their heritage is that literally of the tissue or issue of God and that they are, in effect, God on earth. That's really what the Talmud says. I'm trying to be fair about this. I'm trying to be honest. I'm trying to be open-minded. I've actually even read the Talmud almost completely full, maybe not two times, but in other places repeatedly, and every English translation I can get my hands on. And what they put their promise in, even in their religion, is not even whether you believe in God. And that's what, when people say Israel's a Jewish state, right? Well, how do they define Jewish in Israel? It's not defined as a religious Jew. It is partially defined as a religious Jew. I mean, you can be a religious Jew and be a Jew, but you don't have to be. You can be a Satanist. Hmm. You can be a anti-religious person, an atheist, an agnostic. You can be anything. And you even have rabbis in major Jewish denominations who proclaim themselves atheists. One of the most interesting articles I ever read was in the USA Today by a Jew named Winston. And they were talking about how that atheism and Judaism are completely compatible, which sounds crazy to me because I thought this was a monotheistic religion. But when you read the Talmud, you see all kinds of, demons in there and other gods. And it's really almost a non-monotheistic religion. And there's black magic in it and you conjure up evil spirits and all this other stuff. But it's the interesting thing is that I find it. Is that now that Jews have kind of demonized white people, they don't they don't kind of say they're white anymore. They literally say, no, no, we're not white, and I can show you this in major publications. We're actually different than white people because we're really not Europeans. We didn't really come from Europe. We're not from Europe. And we don't identify with Europe. And we've been persecuted by white people all the time. So we're just one more of these non-white minorities in America that have been persecuted by white people. So you black people shouldn't be upset with us when we have so much power in America and we kind of control the establishment, which you kind of identify as a white establishment. Yeah, you actually should be on our side because whatever we're on your side. But they're not on the side of the black people in this country. Because in a real sense, the change over of America as America's become dominated by this race that is very conscious of the race, that works for the interests of their own people and works for the interests of them on a global sense, which also was the driving force behind communism and the communist ideology and the murder of tens of millions in Europe, was a driving force, that were the basis of the most killing and deadly and horrific wars in the history of the world, First World War and Second World War, and just about all the wars since then. As I mentioned to you the other day, I was doing research into Rostow. And if you actually look, you can look at Wikipedia, and they even talk about Rostow. Now, Rostow was the national security advisor under Johnson, and before that, he was called the special diplomat for international relations. And he was the guy that pushed America into the Vietnam War, which is really interesting. And I really do believe, my opinion is, that Rostow was one of these people involved in the Kennedy assassination. I know you
think
the way I think.
Yeah, R-O-S-T-O-W, Rostow.
Yes.
So you all understand. Rostow. I think, yes, he knew. I think they all knew, those at the top.
Right. And so now, literally from the time of Rostow, the Jewish domination of this, of very loyal people to Jews and Jewish interests worldwide, were very much ensconced ever since the SAS, during the Second World War. Because if you read about the Nuremberg trials, for instance, you ever do some studies, David Irving's done some great books on that. If you read about the Nuremberg trials, you'll find out that I got quotes from major judges, in fact, former Supreme Court judges, that actually resigned and criticized the so-called Nuremberg trials because they are run by people who are not Europeans. They were not even Americans. He said they were a particular group that has long prejudices, against the European people, right, for Christianity and what they call the persecution of these people, and how they were running the Nuremberg trials. And one of the earliest things that affected my understanding of the world as a young man, I hope you don't get bored by this, little bit of a history lesson for my history, but
so fascinating.
I hope it is to the audience. I think it might be. And so one of the most interesting things, one of the books that I read, and I was becoming a bit of a liberal at first because I read a lot, and that's what was in the books that was made available.
It's true.
And that was made available on the evening news every night, which our family watched, Chetley and Huntley all the rest
Huntley
of
them.
Huntley and Brinkley. Interesting.
Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
Chet Huntley and David Brinkley. That's great. And something that's a talk about having an interesting life. I mean, interesting. Years later, after I watched the show for a long, I found out kind of later that Brinkley was a news reader, and he worked for NBC, which is Sarnoff company, and NBC News was completely controlled by Jews who were concerned about the Jewish agenda, just like ABC was, which was Golden Sun at that time, and just like CBS was, which was Palinsky. In fact, the three leaders of the three networks, and the only networks really of television in the United States, which was the most important formative thing, and the thing that really changed America and changed the politics of America and the demographics of America and the principles of America and the culture of America, they were born just with a few hundred kilometers, a few hundred miles from each other in what was called the Old Pale Settlement. And they all had this very angry attitude toward the Russian people, because the Russian people and the Jewish people were almost at war. That's why the great Solzhenitsyn, which I had a chance to work with in Moscow, he was working on a book at the time when I was there. I was working on him with research, helping him when I could, and I was supplying him with a lot of data, of Jewish data from America and Europe, which kind of helped the Russians understand the Jewish attitude toward Russia that wasn't just in terms of Jews with Bolshevism in Russia, but Jews with communism all over the world. And how Jews led the communist movement really in the United States of America as well. They led it in Great Britain. They led it in France. The Scotland House, Scotland Yard, which is the British intelligence in the first part of the 20th century in 1920, sent out a notice to all the major governments of the country, including America. And this is after the war. We were the allies of Great Britain, to France, all the countries, and said communism is an international movement controlled by Jews. But getting back to it, it's so interesting that one of the first things I read by John F. Kennedy, which really impressed me, was a book that was really promoted a lot in America. The media was kind of promoting him at that point for a lot of reasons. He was a very leftist Democrat. And he also promoted the so-called civil rights movement, which I believe fundamentally was not a movement for equal rights for black people. It was really a movement to start the process in motion to change the voting demographics of the country. And to also ultimately give special rights and special privileges to this to the elite of our country, and to discriminate against white people and replace them in government, white Christians, and then they could be replaced, but not just by minorities, but by others. But anytime they could weaken our people in our government and our culture and our publishing and books and all that stuff. Anything they could do that, they would gain more powerful in their position. So the point was, in 2005, the New York Times, which is totally Jewish-owned and controlled and has been since 1895, you have an article by David Brooks called The Chosen Getting In, and he has a statement in there, quote, he said, he talked to a woman watching a speech about the Jewish takeover of the elite of America, how Jews became the elite, our academic and actually our political and our social and publishing and media elite in America. And he said the woman came up to him, and he said that she knew I was Jewish. And I knew, of course, I certainly recognized she was Jewish. Jews have a way of understanding each other. They can almost recognize each other. And they just know, even if they don't even have her obvious Jewish traits. And she said to me, you know what you're talking about here, this takeover of academia. And the takeover of our colleges and our thought processes in America. She says, you know what you're talking about is a Jewish takeover of America. And you know what, this is interesting. And you know what David Brooks, the leading pundit of the New York Times, said?
What?
Yes. You know, of course. It's evident. You know, yes, the Jews did take over the elite of America. You can't deny it.
They've taken over every key choke point or energy crossing or matrix grid intersect. There's a Jewish name in every damn one of those places of power. They've been very smart. I'm amazed at how efficient they've been.
And now we morph into the current issue and what we're going to talk about right now, which is obviously a tragic, horrific, murderous destruction of Ukraine, which was not orchestrated in any way by Russia. It was orchestrated by the United States of America, which might as well be called the United States of America, because it was a small Jewish
20% correct, absolutely
right.
Correct.
Yeah. And this whole war did not start in February of this year, folks.
Oh, it started 8 years ago.
Exactly. It started in 2014 with a Jewish-controlled State Department under John Kerry. Now, a lot of people think John Kerry, he was from Massachusetts, and the people of Massachusetts weren't really informed that he wasn't Irish. You know, you think of Kerry's gold. No, he was the ancestor, where he gets his name, was not named Kerry. It was Cohen.
No. Like Roy and, Cohen, like any Cohen or Cohn, it doesn't matter.
Cohen is the Kohanim, and the Kohanim, by the way, is the elite of the Jews, is what's called the priest class. And to show you again how that Judaism is such a racial religion, the closest connection that I could say it would be to would be the National Socialists, the German SS. The German SS was like the elite of the country, the elite families. They were people who, the best educated, they had to have pure no criminal behaviors, no immoral types of behaviors. They had to be well-educated. They were often preachers and pastors and priests in the Catholic Church. I mean,
well,
literally.
Was really the think about it. It was the elite patriot class.
It really was. And, of course, they were demonized in the war, and they were tortured massively, right? And I can go into that in a minute, and I'll show you what I'm talking about, because I'm going to get to this Kennedy book. And so it's really amazing when you start just to examine this. So the Kohanim is a group of Jews, which they still honor in Jews, as the purest of Jews, even though no Jews are really pure, because there's no question when we look at genealogy, there's no race that's totally pure of one specific race. If you count races as all the different denominations of humanity, even among a single race. But Jews are absolutely cognizant of their genealogy more than any other factor. And in Israel, they have laws where Jews can't marry a goyim, a Gentile. And people might think that's on the basis of religion, but it really isn't. You can be a Jewish atheist. You can be an enemy of the Jewish religion. You can be an enemy of God. You don't have to be a Jew to marry a religious Jew in Israel. But you know what you got to be. You got to be a Jew by descent. You have to have your direct ancestor to be Jewish. Now, theoretically, there can be conversion. But they make so many barriers to conversion. And there are literally... there's just literally practically zero. It's not even a percent point in Israel. The Jews don't marry Gentiles in Israel. Now, some have married Gentiles and they moved to Israel. And most Jews that are married actually in America are second and third marriages, which is kind of an interesting point in itself. It's after they already produced themselves. And the fastest growing body in Israel is, of course, the Haredi and the Lubavitch kind of people, the radical fundamentalist Jews, which are the most racist and radical and supremacist Jews there are. They're not really as smart as Ashkenazi Jews, frankly, or which are more tend to not be the radicals. But there are many Sephardi Jews who are also radical. Perfect example was Obadiah Yosef, who was the chief rabbi of Israel. He was the head of the Chas Party, which, by the way, the Chas Party is in coalition with Netanyahu today. Now, the Chas Party sets the marriage laws of Israel. It sets the immigration laws of Israel. And it is dedicated to preserving Israel as a Jewish state by genetics, not by religion, right? But the Jewish religious law for the state of Israel is that Jews can't marry Gentiles. But the Kohanim, the Kohens, the Keres, the Kohens, right? They can't even marry a Jew, a practicing Jew of religion, even if they're, you know, five-generation Jews. They can't marry a Jew who has any ancestry that's a convert. They can only marry a Jew who doesn't have any ancestry that is among the converts, which is all, it's kind of a myth anyway, because you go back far enough and you're going to find some different genes, right? But the point that that's really showing the height of it. Now, the National Socialists and the SS was required to have, in most cases, there were different levels of this, but the SS was required to have four generations of not just of German, but just pure white blood, pure European blood. And that's what they demanded, or that they wanted from that. It was like to celebrate the best of their people, just like any people might celebrate the best of their athletes who are their people, or the best scientists of their people, right?
But were there Jews in the SS, though?
Yeah, they weren't Jews in the SS.
Any at all?
I think there may have been some in the Waffen SS, the fighting SS.
That's the group I'm thinking about.
Yeah. They could have. But they even had some.
We had 215,000 minimum Jews, German Jews, joined up. They weren't forced. They weren't conscripts. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of things you couldn't even quite consider. You know, the National Socialists were definitely concerned about preserving the white race, for sure. And they didn't want to hurt the other people of Europe. In fact, you know, when they conquered France, their government didn't lock up all the French soldiers and keep them outdoors and kill a million of them after the war. They didn't torture them in trials, you know. In fact, they supported the government to call their old Congress in Vichy, France, and they had legal democratic elections in France under the Germans. You know, the Germans were, of course, at the top of the heap in terms of because they were fighting a world war. They couldn't have France, you know, go with the Allies or something, go with the British. And they literally allowed and were happy to have the most famous patriot of France become the prime minister of the country. And that's who they elected. And and by the way, the British, the French Parliament, which didn't have Germans in it, the Germans didn't run it, the Germans didn't dictate anything to them, but the Parliament in Vichy, France, is where the Parliament met. That was the Parliament seat. They voted something like 450 or so against 120. Yeah, some vote against it. The Germans didn't go prosecute them and put them in camps for voting against it. But they voted for ending the war, for peace. And the great Robert Froissart, who I knew well in France, who was a very great scholar, academic that I had so much respect for, did a lot of work on Holocaust issues.
Yeah, he was something else, that man.
He was great. I wonder if you ever interviewed him. Did you ever get a chance to do
that? I did not have that opportunity, no.
Well, I just spent a few days with
him. Certainly
knew
of his work, though. Yeah.
And he showed me the monuments in France, like the monument to the First World War. And there's this huge monument there. And he shows me the monument in the First World War. And you see, it's small. This is a small village, really. And it's just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of names of young Frenchmen who died in that war. And he said, the European people, the sensible people of Europe, knew that continuing or fighting a world war, continuing this world war with all the countries of Europe killing one another, which ultimately killed 75 million people, it wasn't worth the cost. You're not fighting for freedom and love and human rights when you're killing 75 million people, many of them women and children. When you're burning down the cities.
No return.
Right. So this is what a lot of things that affected my life a lot. So I read John F. Kennedy's book, and it was beginning to get some inklings that something was not right in our politics. And Kennedy's book was Profiles of Courage, the greatest American, you know, courageous men of the United States of America. And he had a whole chapter on Taft, Senator Taft of Ohio. And Taft had a lifelong dream of being president. He was the most respected Republican. The only reason why Eisenhower won the nomination was because of the war. You know, he was the war hero. But Taft and did some things where, again, he put the people first and the truth first. And so he became a big opponent of the Nuremberg war trials. Because he investigated them in the Senate, he called committee meetings about this. And he found out that the German officers and people were captured. These are just regular soldiers and other people in government of any level. And they were charged with all these offenses in the Nuremberg trials. And they were tortured. I mean, more of them were tortured than were not tortured, than the conditions they were done. And when they were not tortured, and some of the elite were afraid some of this stuff would get out, they literally took German officers and German civilian people, and they said, okay, listen, if you don't sign this confession or you don't say that this happened and that happened, you know, we're going to kill your wife and your children. Mm-hmm. We're going to rape them. We're going to have our biggest, black units come in and rape your kids, stuff like that, which they knew that they wouldn't like. Well, no American would like that either. But that's like to just punctuate it, right? That's what they did. This is reality. And Taft ran hearings on this. And one of the things they came up with, a hearing, which was one of the top Supreme Court of, I think, Iowa, who was one of the judges of it. And he said, what they showed was that this is one example of the SS officers. And these are fighting men at the front and so forth. One example of the SS officers in terms of the connection with the, quote, Holocaust, unquote, was that, and this is what Taft revealed in committee meeting, and this was also published in a number of papers around the world when we had a little more freedom of speech. But the the data said, the research said, the testimony proved, this is from Americans testifying, of the 136, in one of the biggest trials of SS officers, of the 136 men who were forced, were literally signed confessions and were convicted in Nuremberg trials, right? 134, like every all but two, had their testicles damaged beyond repair, kicked and damaged beyond repair. I think, and I've read the stories of the reality of this, and some of these interlopers, these torturers, would take a pair of pliers. And I don't know if a male could conceive of this. I guess women would be a little harder, but women should be able to conceive of this too. Imagine somebody putting a pair of pliers on one of your bodily reproductive organs and squeezing. I think you just about sign anything. And if that didn't work, if they told you that they were going to have your wife and children raped and killed, what, you know, this, and but this is the kind of things they did. Now, I'm not making this up. Taft exposed it. And Kennedy, you know, saw Taft as a great example of an honest and decent man. And maybe that's one reason why Kennedy was killed. I think Kennedy was a bit of a leftist, and he certainly was a peace person, which I agree with at these points. I don't think we should have been in these wars since the war. And I grew up thinking that Patton was right, that we should have gone on into Moscow. But if we had fought another war with what was Russia then and America, the Russians had millions of men under arms and incredible weapons. This is, you know, and I don't even think we had atom bombs. I don't think an atom bomb war against Europeans, what would that do to Europe? My God. Hmm. Yet, ultimately, the Russians overthrew communism. Ultimately, right. The Russians overthrew communism. And when you think about that, and we
and they never forgot either. We should mention that, make it real clear. They remember what Bolshevism did to Russia.
So this is the one that kind of got me going to start realizing. And then we've just had the recent stuff come out about the Kennedy assassination. That's where we talked about that in the very beginning of the show, right? Mm-hmm. So I believe, as Piper, my good friend, Mike Piper, said in his great book, I believe that the reason that Kennedy was assassinated because Israel didn't like him. And Rostow didn't like the people controlling our intelligence because Rostow was the very top of our intelligence. He was the top national security advisor. He rose that position. He was really de facto that before the Kennedy assassination. And remember this SAS, the same people that the great jurist exposed, you know, how the Jews were running the Nuremberg trials and the SAS and the secret services of this country. That's when the Jews first started taking over our government. And by the 1960s, the Russians were in the process of overthrowing the Jewish Bolsheviks. Uh-huh. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got Dr. Slattery on the line. He was calling me in. And Dr. Slattery, I can tell you this. The audience might be interested in this. My co-host quite often on the Rents Radio Network. He's my co-host quite often, and he's a great authority. And I talked to Jeff, doctor, and he's looking forward to you being on the show sometime. I'm on with Very Jeff good. Rentz right now on a great audience. So don't be sorry, but don't worry about it. You didn't realize. I didn't know I was going to be on so late either.
Darn. I know you You're told supposed me to be earlier. Asleep.
Yeah, I should be asleep, actually. But I did call you earlier, and you just got back to me. So I forgive you for calling me so late, too. But I'll talk to you in the morning. I'll see you in the show probably tomorrow. Anyway, Jeff, sorry for that interruption there.
That's
but
right.
By the way, Dr. Slattery is an incredible admirer of yours as well. So
well, that's very nice. Thank
okay,
you.
So now we've gone to Kennedy assassination, which we now know that that's still being held secret against us and held. And now they're trying to say that the Russians did it. The Russians didn't do it.
No,
it was CIA.
No.
It was SAS. Of course it was. And right now the top intelligence agency of this country, the top intelligence official, the person that's the ultra secret person of America, I talked about with you last week for a minute about this, is Avril Haines. Avril Haines, her mother was Rappaport. She was one of the biggest advocates of Americans torturing people in the last few wars. She was an advocate of the neocon war. She is a radical Zionist. She
never hear the name.
Avril Haines.
Out of the media. Nah, you don't hear the name.
Yeah. It's, now, it's she is the ultimate, unknown. And she's the one the CIA and the FBI reports to. She has the ultimate secrets of the United States. And when you consider Biden's demented, and he has a Jewish chief of staff, and he decides even what Biden even sees, this is a woman, one single Jewish radical woman who, by the way, admits and says she loves the Mossad. Now, the Mossad's committed terrorism against America in the Levant Affair. Read about the Levant Affair, folks. They sponsored the most damaging spy in America in history. That was Jonathan Pollard. They stole our secrets, right, at that time, early on, to the Soviet Union. And then we also had the attack on the Liberty, a U.S. naval ship. And they knew it was an American ship. But this is the realities of the takeover. Now, let's go to the Congress today. In fact, a few minutes ago. You remember when Netanyahu came to Congress and he was given 15 ovations?
I think Zelensky, it was 29.
Maybe it was 29. I don't know. But that's because, you know, they know who butters their bread. They knew the people they have to go along with. They knew who's responsible, whether they get money to run or whether their opponents get money to run. They know who they've got to please if they're going to have the media tear them a new one, a new way of clearing out the excrement, or whether they're going to keep them intact, right? I mean, that's the reality of what's going on in this country. And the reality, if when people say that, you know, we have a democracy, it's the biggest lie in the history of the world. It's not a democracy. It's a Jewish oligarchy. It's the Jews who control most of the funding in the Democratic Party and in the Republican Party. This is a fact. 18 of the 19 biggest contributors to Clinton were Jews and Jewish radicals. These weren't happen to be Jews, right? These are Jews who support Jewish organizations, the Jewish State of Israel, and then support Jewish supremacy, and will never say a word about the real supremacy that rules the New York Times, the supremacy that rules the biggest media corporations on earth, the supremacy that suppresses our thought and speech on Facebook, right, with Zuckerberg,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
The Jewish supremacy that rules and controls our minds, literally reaches into our minds. And unknowingly, and by the way, the guy that revealed this is another Jewish guy, Epstein, no relation, I guess, to Jeffrey Epstein. The guy that actually, this is a guy who was one of the publishers, one of the editors of, what's the name of it? Psychology Magazine. Uh-huh. And they did big studies, and they showed that so-called Alphabet, or what's called Google, which controls 90% of the search engine in America, and YouTube, and these other huge media corporations, because they're able to censor what they don't want you to hear, and because they have very strong ideas and very strong preferences of who they want to be president, or who they want to be elected, who they want to destroy, who they want to jail, who they want to hurt, who they want to elevate, because of that, they have enormous power over the mind. Any young kid, any older person now, if I want to look up something, I start with Google. And I like to use the Yandex as well, a Russian one, which is a little fairer. But I start with Google because it's the source you go to. But when I read Wikipedia, I know that Wikipedia is financed by Google. It's controlled by Google. And without Google giving the links to Wikipedia, they wouldn't be Wikipedia. They wouldn't be the world's encyclopedia. And if 99% of the time when people go to look up a name, a party, a political opinion, a political process, a movement, an individual politician like David Duke, you can go read about David Duke, but it's nothing but a heap of filthy, nasty lies. They don't even let me put in the statement by the U.S. government when they prosecute me for taxes, where the U.S. government, after the prosecution, after editing my taxes, you know, revealed that I overpaid my taxes by $6,000. You know, they wouldn't even let me put the letter from the government about that on my Wikipedia page, because
Wikipedia is an open sewer of defamation and slander.
That's terrible.
And
they defame you too.
Under my name,
for
example, it has been too many years to count since I was allowed to put anything to try to straighten out the lies and the corruption that's in there. It's all written by them. And anything that's changed, it'll immediately snap back to the filth that's in there. So I don't even go. I never look there anymore. I don't care.
So we're now approaching the climax, if I can use that word. I mean, you know, it used to be you could say words like that with having a sexual connotation, but now sex is in everything, that every word is used in sex.
Yeah,
but
guess who created that venue?
That scenario. It was those wonderful people like, what is his name? The guy that was head of, is the Weinstein brothers. That great respecter of.
Well, Weinstein was just convicted again of rape in L.A. last week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and you know, Hollywood is famous for these Jewish moguls of media. And even back then, they were already starting to brainwash our people in certain areas. Like they were teaching everybody that you had to have a drink of hard liquor or you weren't cool, right? Every elite person, every educated person had to go home and have that hard liquor.
Knock a couple of them back, or you weren't a man. You weren't.
That's right. And then you look at the toll of alcoholism. You look at the toll of that on our families, and because a lot of people weren't able to defend themselves.
And don't forget cigarettes, right?
Okay. Cigarettes. Yeah. Yeah. That's why they demonized. That's why they demonized saturated fat. You know, which is a natural fat, whereas the seed oils we never eaten in the history of mankind. They demonized that. And they put forth the saturated fat theory of heart disease, right? Because cigarettes was really killing the biggest majority of people. But don't worry, man. They replaced cigarettes, right, with seed oils. And now the cancer rate is more than ever. When we're eating natural foods, like, you know, when we're eating natural dairy products, others.
Well, before Rockefeller medicine came in and upset the whole balance of nature, we were healthy people. We had wonderful food, basically.
Two last points in the last 3 or 4 minutes we have. Maybe we can extend it a little bit to the hour, but I know this is your last show, but you got to get your commercials in too. But look, let's cover two subjects real quickly. One is the biggest thing in the news in the last few weeks has been the censorship of the Hunter Biden laptop. We've talked about that. I talked about that 2 weeks ago. I'll just reiterate it one more time. There was no Russian disinformation. The media universally on all the Jewish networks told us that the Russians were behind this and it wasn't real. It's Russian lies. It's not Russians that give us disinformation. The disinformation in regard to that was Jewish disinformation in the Jewish media of this country and the Jewish-controlled politicians of this country. It wasn't the Russians. And that's exactly a metaphor for what we're going to talk about now in this last minute or two. And that's the Ukrainian war. Zelensky was honored by the United States Congress tonight. Again, they gave him 8 or 10. I don't know how many it was, but it was a lot. I stopped counting after 8. But this guy is a mass murderer. He is the worst Jewish Zionist mass murderer and destroyer of
Don't
Ukraine.
Forget drug addict and pervert.
Exactly. Since the Holodomor. Even today, they always talk about Baba Yar, where supposedly a few thousand Jews were killed, and massacred or whatever, by Nazis and by Ukrainians and Cossacks. They hate Ukrainians. Zelensky hates Ukrainians. Jews hate Ukrainians. And this guy, he is creating the worst mass murder of patriotic Ukrainians and decent Ukrainians and white Ukrainians, beautiful Ukrainians, Christians, since the Holodomor.
He's throwing them into a meat grinder. He's just grinding them up. He doesn't care.
And this is what I wrote in my gab today. I'll just share this with you as a kind of
Ukrainian
a final comment.
Goyim. That's what they are.
Exactly. And they're only about 1/4 of 1% of the population of Ukraine, but they are the gangsters that run the country. And that's why they hate Russia, because Putin overthrew almost all the gangsters, all the Jewish gangsters around the country, who, by the way, even the Guardian newspaper in Britain had an article just the other day about this and how the 6 or 7 so-called oligarchs who owned 50%, took over 50% of the resources of Russia, 6 of the 7 were Jews, right? And Putin got rid of all of them. In fact, now there are still some Jewish billionaires, but they are a tiny percentage of the population. In America, 40% of our billionaires are Jews. In Great Britain, 50% of the billionaires and the richest people of Great Britain are Jews, who are less than 1/2 of 1% of the population. So I guess we're out of time, but the point is that Zelensky is the biggest single murderer and destroyer of Ukraine since the Holodomor, led by Kaganovich, who was Jewish, from the Soviet Union, and it was actually committed by the Jewish tyrants who ran the Ukrainian Communist Party. That's who did the act. You know, he was a
Jewish
actor.
Now, don't be fooled. All right, we got to run, but don't be fooled. They're using the term Nazi to hide behind. These are communist, fascist, Bolshevik killers.
The president of Ukraine is a radical Jewish Zionist. The prime minister of Ukraine is a radical Jewish Zionist, what they boast about. The head of defense is Reznikov, is a Jew. The head of all of
the media
is Jews.
The top four are all Jewish.
Right.
On this day, December 21st, 1945, General George S. Patton was murdered in Germany by Zionists.
Wow. That's exactly right.
On this day.
And I wish he'd have become president. And he was the guy that said that. He said, I don't like this war crimes stuff. You know what he said? He said, it's Semitic, right? And he said, you know, he said, all the Germans I met, every single German I met was a good Christian, was a moral person, was upstanding and decent. But he said, every one of these displaced people, these communist Jews, and so many of them were communists, he said they were the dregs of humanity. That's what Patton said.
Read his letters to his wife if you want to see confirmation.
That's why they killed him.
Of this.
And so
that's exactly
this is amazing. Right. These people that stood up for this man and support this war, and anybody who thinks that they're saving lives, that they're being humanitarian by sending more weapons to Ukraine, all you're doing is you're killing more innocent. The quicker this war ends, and the Russians are going to win this war, I guarantee you. Mark my words, they're going to win this war. They're not going to stop. But even if the Russians didn't win the war, the Ukrainians have already lost. They've already lost hundreds of thousands of young men.
Dead and injured. 100,000 dead minimum. And
careers have been destroyed.
Wounded.
Tens of thousands of businesses have been destroyed. Schools have been destroyed. Oh. People's education have been destroyed.
Yeah.
And for what? Because they didn't want, because the Eastern Ukrainians wanted to be able to speak their ancestral language, which is Russian. And by the way, the Ukrainian language is basically Russian, just a dialect of Russian. I mean, the whole thing
Got
is
it.
Crazy.
All right.